Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Randall White. This hour, we're speaking with several experts who have tips to help us leave 2020 behind and maximize the year ahead. New Year's Day is just over 2 weeks away, and it may just be a date on the calendar, but there is a psychological reset many of us can do on that day, and even leading up to it. The promise of a coronavirus vaccine landing at this same time just really adds to the promise of 2021. Currently, it's just being given to first responders, including those at the UC Davis Med Center in Sacramento. But soon it'll start to roll out to other groups of people. Some fear that they'll be pushed farther down the list while the rich and powerful step up to be vaccinated first. But our first guest says those trying to take cuts may not have such an easy time. Ana Ibarra is a reporter with CalMatters and looked into this issue and joins us now. Ana, great to speak with you again. So how difficult will it be for people to cut in line? What do the experts say?
Yeah, so, you know, health officials and doctors I spoke to seem to be pretty optimistic that it would be really difficult to cut in line, especially in this initial stage when the vaccine is going out, you know, only to hospitals and nursing homes. Everyone's watching and, you know, the state is sharing how many vaccines are out there, when they're arriving. So you have the facilities, the counties, and the state monitoring this. And the idea is that every vaccine is supposed to be accounted for. Now, when the vaccine moves beyond health workers, you know, and is ready for other essential workers and just a larger group of people, that's when experts say we might see things like people trying to buy their way into the line.
Right.
And that's just because there will be a lot more vaccines to track and you have more providers handling the vaccines.
Yeah. Ana, how exactly does the state track the vaccines to make sure that they're going to the right people?
Right. So what we've heard from health officials is that data will be inputted into a state immunization registry, as they do with other vaccines. And that is supposed to help track, you know, how many doses are administered, who's getting it, where, and when they're due for their next dose. The state's public health department also said that they would be putting together this public dashboard with some data on how many vaccines have been given. And in yesterday's press conference, Dr. Galli, the state's health secretary, said that they're hoping they can start reporting these numbers sometime this week.
Mm-hmm. So there's some history, I guess, we could go back, you know, to look at with shortages of vaccines. I'm thinking back to H1N1. What have we seen in the past when there is a shortage of vaccines like flu shots?
Yeah, so it was really interesting to see, you know, I learned this in 2004 that there was a flu vaccine shortage and there were reports of federal authorities seizing thousands of doses that were imported illegally from other countries and headed to the black market. And as you mentioned, in 2009, during the swine flu pandemic, the CDC also reported fraud, people advertising and selling fake vaccines. So there is this theft and crime component to all of this, too.
Mm-hmm. What are some red flags maybe we should look out for to see whether some of that's actually happening?
Yeah. So I think, you know, people as consumers, you know, have to watch out for, you know, things like people offering an early dose for payment. You know, we know vaccines are going to be free. And if you get the vaccine at your doctor's office, there might be a fee for your appointment. But generally, there should be the vaccine should be free of charge. You know, people should also watch out for anyone asking for too much personal information, like social security numbers and, you know, credit card and things like that. That's not required to get a vaccine. So obviously, don't give anyone that type of personal information.
Right. Do we know yet who gets the vaccine after, of course, this first round with the healthcare workers and nursing homes?
We don't know yet, but we are expecting to learn that soon. And so, you know, the state created this panel of experts that is responsible for deciding who goes next. Then there's also this community advisory group who's recommending on who should go next and why. And so this advisory group is meeting later this afternoon. And this group is made up of, you know, 60 plus community groups, labor groups. You have disability rights advocates, you know, the ACLU is part of this. So their job is really to make the case for their workers and members. And like I said, they're meeting later this afternoon, you know, and we're expecting to see some of this listing pretty soon.
Yeah. Ana Ibarra is a reporter with CalMatters. Thank you for all of that. This is a time when, like, really any story around the vaccine bubbles to the top because we all want to know more about it. So really appreciate your reporting.
Thank you.
So where do you think you might actually fall in line when it comes to vaccine distribution? Well, our next guest developed an online tool to help you figure that out. Stuart Thompson is a writer and editor for the opinion section of the New York Times. In conjunction with a couple of other organizations, he put together this online place in line tool to see when you might get your coronavirus vaccine. And welcome to Insight, Stuart. Great to have you here.
Nice to be here. Thanks.
Yeah. So where does the data come from for you to put this tool together?
So there's two groups that assembled the data, but they've mostly pulled from public data sources. And they could do that because we have an idea of what the vaccine line will be. This is still being debated, but we know that, like, there's healthcare workers come first, there's people in nursing homes, there's first responders, and we can calculate the number of people that are in each of those groups in, you know, every county, every state, and across the country. And that's kind of the data that was pulled together to give you a sense of how many people might be before you in the line.
Yeah. What do you think might surprise people about their place in line?
Probably how many millions of people are standing in front of them. It definitely surprised me to see, I think it was, you know, 250 million people across the U.S. are in front of me, and maybe several million in my state. But that's actually a good thing if you're later in line, because it really means you have a lower risk than people before you. So that's one way to read it. But if you're trying to, you know, go on vacation soon, you might be frustrated. But I think the order really speaks to how many people have to get the vaccine soon and how many lives can really be saved if you reach those high risk people before, you know, healthy adults.
Right, of course. So is this a firm number, would you say it is, or is it subject to change?
It's definitely subject to change. These are estimates. These are big groups, and estimates are just that. So it's likely to change. And it's also kind of a worst case scenario. So, you know, my number, I think, was 260 million. But a lot of those people are not actually going to be standing in line. They might opt to not get it. And, you know, the orders might change as they're debated. So the CDC, a group in the CDC, is debating the final order. They've only decided the first two. And people that I talked to for the story said, you know, there's still time. There's, you know, a shortage of supply right now. They're working their way down this list, and they're going to decide, you know, the subsequent groups over the next couple of weeks.
So a couple of us on the Insight team have filled out this online tool. And one of the questions that it asks you is the county you live in, which of course also indicates the state that you live in. Do states decide their own vaccine order?
Exactly. Yeah. So states will probably rely on pretty much the order set by the CDC. And there's a lot of groups that have proposed different orders. We used one from National Academies of Sciences. But yeah, the, you know, governors can jump in, and there might be a political process there, which is a little concerning. So one group that we were looking at is prisoners. They come earlier in the order for good reason. They're more likely to contract coronavirus in a prison setting where it's hard to socially distance. But you can see how that might play out in some states. I think the governor of Colorado sort of laughed at the idea that prisoners would get it before people who haven't committed a crime, you know, despite the science saying that's a good idea to, you know, save lives before other people get it. So yeah, there'll be a process, and states will set their own order, but I imagine it's going to be roughly the order reflected in the story.
Mm-hmm. Stuart, I imagine that this is a very popular destination on the New York Times website. What sort of traffic are you seeing?
Yeah. Oh, it's extremely popular. Defied all my expectations for sure. But I think it's just, you know, people are kind of desperate for any clarity on what's happening. And for a long time, you know, while I was working on it, I had that question too. Where am I in the order? And, you know, when am I going to get it? And the when question was impossible to answer just because of the uncertainty around, you know, supply and manufacturing and distribution. But, you know, where you are on the line was something we could answer. And I think it gives you a hard number that you can, you know, think about and meditate on as you're falling asleep at night for how many people are going to get it before you.
Right. What did you think of your place in line?
Yeah, I mean, when you see, because people were talking about the number of people in the order for a while, but not in like hard numbers. When you see a figure like 256 million, you know, it gives you a bit of a pause. It makes you think about what the next few months are going to look like. And, you know, there's a lot of optimism around the vaccine. I did an earlier piece about how long it will take to get a vaccine. A lot of people, experts that are talking to them are just saying it's not possible. They were setting an 18-month timeline. Yeah, so it's, you know, you're kind of wrestling with your own sense of optimism and pessimism. And, you know, like, I think seeing some of the reactions that we got from people who were late in line and they were comfortable with it gave me like good perspective on it being a good thing to be near the end. But even within those final groups, you know, I'm behind 256 million and I'm in a pretty large group of sort of healthy adults. But within that group, if there's not enough supply by the time you get to them, there's going to be potentially be divisions among who gets it first within that group. So if you commute into the office, you might come sooner than someone who can work from home. And I can work from home as a journalist. So now the same true for essential workers. You might be an essential worker, but if you're not a frontline worker, as in you're not regularly in contact with people, you might be bumped back pretty far in the line. So yeah, it gives you some clarity, but there's still a lot of questions exactly how it will roll out.
One aspect of it that I really liked is that, so when I filled it out, I was about midway through the line, and you can look to see who's in front of you, who's behind you. And of course, when you see the people that are in front of you, you're like, well, of course, those people should be in front of me. But then you can't, you know, there were a couple of questions I wasn't sure about, you know, if sure. In terms of like underlying conditions and stuff like that. So I went back in and changed it. It really alters your position in the line.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, one of the challenges of putting together a tool like this is some of the hard divisions that exist when you're just putting people into big, broad buckets of people, where, you know, in reality, they might be more fine-tuned than that. So one is, are you elderly or not? If you're elderly, especially in a nursing home, you come really early in the order. And that's because of all the deaths we've seen, the death rate is so much higher among elderly Americans. But if you're 64 or 65, should you be moved, you know, 200 million people back in line? That seems a little less clear. And the recommendations from National Sciences and others have been to get someone sort of down the road to suggest the order based on health risks. And, you know, there might be more finer tuned orders than what we see in the graphic in the end. But yeah, that's the kind of conversations that are happening right now.
Stuart, I know that, you know, most of your focus was on building this tool so that it works well and that sort of thing. I'm not sure how much you got into the specifics when it comes to each category, but I'm wondering if, you know, in your reporting for this, you determined whether it would be easy for someone to say, I have an underlying condition. Like, what sort of rules will the distribution process follow when it comes to what somebody says they have?
Yeah, that was one of the challenges they highlighted in the report. So, you know, it's easy to reach healthcare workers. You can just go to their hospital. But for most of the other groups, not just the people with underlying health conditions, but, you know, essential workers and frontline workers, right, reaching them is going to present its own challenges. I don't know that there's a lot of clarity yet on exactly how to make those decisions. I imagine it's going to go sort of like in big, broad buckets of companies and people like that. And, you know, there might be some divisions among people that work from home. I believe that the way that it's rolled out in the UK so far, it surprised me sort of with how relaxed maybe it was. I saw a report of a guy just sort of calling up the hospital and showing up because he was elderly. But that makes some kind of sense, because if there's a limited supply and, you know, you can qualify sort of on an age threshold, then you can show up and get it for supply.
Yeah. Stuart Thompson is a writer and editor for the opinion section of the New York Times. And I got to say that your place in line tool is, I'm sure I'm going to fill it out again, because it's one of those things you just keep checking, you know. So, Stuart, thanks so much for sharing your information with us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
All right, straight ahead, getting your financial house in order for the new year. We'll have tips for small businesses and individuals. Plus, we'll look at ways to include more joy and compassion in your life and how those emotions physically affect you. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Randall White, and we're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
And you're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Randall White, and our focus today is how to be a better you in 2021. I mean, we all know 2020 has been an incredibly tough year, well, on many levels, but financially for many, as we entered a pandemic-driven recession back in the spring. Small businesses may have been hardest hit as efforts to control the spread of COVID-19 forced many to shut their doors. Of course, individually, we've felt the financial blows of this as well, but some in the banking industry feel 2021 is going to offer incredible business opportunities if we can just make it through this darkest period. James Beckwith is the president and CEO of Five Star Bank, and for transparency, we do want you to know that Five Star Bank is an advertiser on CAP Radio, and CAP Radio banks with Five Star as well. Mr. Beckwith is joining us with financial planning tips at a time when we're in the midst of, you know, more severe stay-at-home orders. So great to have you with us, James.
Thank you for having me, Randall. Yeah, so, looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, me too. How can business owners and individuals ride out these additional shutdowns due to COVID-19? We're smack dab in the middle of them again.
Well, we sure are. But help is on the way. I guess my advice would be to small business owners and the folks that work for them is to be patient. There's a lot of good movement going on back in Washington, D.C. right now for a new stimulus bill, which looks like it's going to be able to provide, up to $300 million of new PPP opportunities for small business, which will be more directed, I think, than the last PPP initiative. Mm-hmm. Some direct payments may be made directly to folks, just like there was in the CARES Act, and then some extended unemployment benefits. So this is coming about right now, and they're working as we speak to try to come together and get a bill done. So I'd be patient. Stay tuned to Capital Public Radio, because I'm sure you're right. Inform everybody about what's going on. But I think that's my message right now. We got to get through this next month or so. All right. Got to hunker down, conserve your cash, have a plan, all right, of how you're going to get through this. But I think help is on the way.
You're optimistic that the lawmakers can work this out and bring us something meaningful in terms of carrying us through to the other side?
Oh, I am. I am optimistic that that's going to happen. I think there's some coalescing going on in negotiations and compromise, which is always a good thing. So I am very optimistic about something getting done, maybe this week.
You talk about cash flow and knowing, like, where the money's coming from, where it's going. I know that over the course of this year, I learned a lot about my cash flow. I didn't realize I was spending so much at restaurants. I personally think it's money well spent, but it came as a surprise to me. I was like, wow, I really do spend a lot right there. So give us some insight into that, into knowing where the money's coming from and where it's going.
Well, as we roll into 2021, I think it's incumbent upon everybody to really to plan and to budget. Certainly, budgeting starts with looking back this past year where you did spend money. There's great tools, there's apps for this, but having a personal plan, a personal budget as we roll into the year is going to be very important. And, we're looking at those expenditures that are discretionary, you may want to think about putting them off a little bit until things settle down. It really starts with having a plan and a budget.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about ways to move your business footprint online, where social distancing is not an issue. I know that you have some tips in this realm. And, you know, we just had some artists on Monday. And really, some of those artists that are surviving now because they did just that. There were definitely winners and losers over the last year based on their online footprint, right?
Absolutely. What we saw is with our customers is there's been a lot of success stories. And the success stories are really grounded in the fact that people were able to pivot and to leverage the internet and develop a really cohesive digital strategy. We certainly saw that in our business in terms of how we touch customers and touch prospects. Those businesses that are either deliver products or service that were able to expand their digital footprint, were able to really kind of weather the storm and also really grow their business. So it's really accelerated our use of what I would call digital capabilities. You know, who knew what a Zoom was a year ago? I certainly didn't.
I did not either.
I think we live by Zoom now, Randall.
We do. There is a bit of Zoom fatigue, I know, for people, but I couldn't do Insight without it. There are other platforms, but having conversations, having meaningful relationships through this, online infrastructure has become a thing. So, James, I'm wondering what advice you have for business owners and I guess just individuals when it comes to diversifying streams of income.
Sure. With every recession, Randall, comes opportunity. Investing at the bottom, or if you will, at the trough of a recession right now, in terms of a strategy as you're moving forward, is could really put yourself in a great position 12 months out from now. I'm a believer in investing at the trough of a recession, and I think we're there right now. So leverage your ability to, to connect with your customers in a digital way. There's going to be potentially in this new stimulus act, better access to capital through the SBA. Maybe a decrease in fees that the SBA would charge.
And that's the Small Business Administration?
That's correct. Excuse me. Yeah, the Small Business Administration. You can remember the last recession, the SBA was very instrumental in helping businesses stand up by increasing their guarantee, increasing the loan size, and also reducing their fees. So look for those types of opportunities when you need capital. With the SBA.
Yeah. So James, even if you're in a really bad spot right now and this year has just taken a toll on you financially and you hear the advice to, invest in the trough, you think invest with what? You say there are some resources.
There is. Our federal government and even our state government has a I think a $500 million program that they've just rolled out this week. There's opportunities there. Be resourceful, I think, is another piece of advice. There's money out there to be able to help you either grow your business or keep it open. It's incumbent upon that small business owner to be resourceful.
In your day-to-day interactions with your customers, what are you hearing as the largest concerns, and then how are you advising them on those?
Well, the biggest concern is getting the stimulus bill done. Biggest concern is what could potentially happen from a change in tax law, both at the federal level and the state level. The biggest concern is how this recession is impacting their business. But I'm going to tell you, here in the Capital Region, I'm going to focus on the Capital Region here a little bit, Randall. It's not a bad picture at all. You're seeing a lot of migration happen with, I'm going to say, tech workers coming over from the Bay Area. There's been a drain of tech workers out of San Francisco, either migrating to Sacramento or to Austin. And we stand to benefit from that in the long run. You can see a lot of new homes being built out here. And these folks are high wage earners. And high wage earners bring a lot of value to any community in which they reside. There's a strategy at Greater Sacramento Economic Council, which I'm a board member, called Next Out West. And that is a talent acquisition strategy of really reaching out to those tech workers that are in the Bay Area. Hey, come out and check out Sacramento. It's a great place to live.
And I guess if you get a large enough concentration of workers with those skills all here in one place, then when a company is looking at, you know, where else should we go in the Silicon Valley or other than the Silicon Valley, they can build here where the workers already are, and then those commutes are erased.
Absolutely. In addition to that, I shouldn't say or, but in addition to that, when you have a workforce that's in one region, what can happen is that you get a lot of startup business that rolls out of that. And a lot of, hey, I can build a better mousetrap than my company's building right now. And so that could happen also. Mm-hmm. as these workers have developed their, their practice, if you will, their chops, and they want to do it on their own. So I would expect to see some of that happening too. Businesses that's coming out of, growing out of this migration.
All right, James, to close here, if I understand you correctly, your big piece of advice heading into 2021 is hang in there. Things are going to get better. It will be rosier in 2021, and we just have to make it through this dark spell.
You said it a lot better than I did. Thank you.
No, Randall. I don't know about that yet.
I'm optimistic about 2021 for everything that I laid out. Be patient. It's going to get better.
All right. James Beckwith, president and CEO of Five Star Bank. Thanks so much for spending some time with us this morning.
Thank you, Randall.
Well, when we look back on 2020, many of us will say good riddance, right? But it wasn't all bad. In fact, some of us may have had some really strong moments of compassion, joy, and gratitude. Those are emotions that our next guest has studied extensively. And she's an expert in social psychology as a registered psychotherapist and as an assistant professor of management at the Levy School of Business at Santa Clara University in Silicon Valley. Dr. Huria Jazairi says, contrary to what many may believe, compassion is somewhat like a muscle that can be strengthened with exercise, or it can shrink if not used. It's really your choice. Doctor, welcome to Insight. Great to have you here.
Thanks so much for having me, Randall. I'm excited to be here.
Boy, this is the year to talk about these things, right? Compassion, joy, and gratitude.
Absolutely. I can't think of a better time to think about suffering and how we can bring more joy into our lives.
So I found that piece from you. It was in a UC Berkeley publication where you said that compassion is like a muscle. If you use it, you know, it gets stronger. If you don't, it withers. Would you say that's true also for joy and gratitude?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wrote for the Greater Good Science Center quite a bit when I was there doing my PhD. And, you know, emotional health is important, and thinking about what are the types of repetitions that we're doing in our lives to bring more compassion, to bring more joy, to bring more gratitude. And some of that requires some intention, in that we are manufacturing in some way opportunities to experience compassion and joy and gratitude. And other times we can stumble upon these moments. I was on a walk the other day through my neighborhood, and it's the same walk I take every single day, and noticed the beautiful colors of the fall leaves. And it was just a moment where I could acknowledge that, one, we do have seasons in California, but two, just the beauty and nature all around us. And again, this is a walk that I take quite regularly and have failed to notice this at times.
Yeah, I actually saw several posts online, people asking, is this one of the most brilliant falls in Sacramento? You know, we are the city of trees, and it's every year it's pretty stunning. But I was thinking the same thing. Boy, it sure seems different this year. But maybe it's not different. Maybe we just really spent the time to notice it.
Yeah, that's quite possible after spending 9 months quarantining in my apartment. That moment when I get outside and I can really take in nature and take in all the colors can be quite magnificent.
Can you help us understand how the emotions are related? Joy with gratitude and compassion?
Yeah, it's a great question because it can seem a little paradoxical given that compassion is about acknowledging suffering. So why on earth would compassion be related to joy? I think it's important to remember that compassion comes in different forms. So we can give compassion to other people. We can give compassion to ourselves. We can receive compassion from others. And we can also observe or witness compassion unfolding between people. All of this can generate joy. So for example, if I extend compassion to someone else, that has the potential to bring us closer together, to help us form more meaningful relationships. And ultimately, it allows us to see the world a bit more accurately. So the world does contain some suffering. And I think that this year has really taught us that on a micro and macro level.
How do you think these emotions, Doctor, could help us during this incredibly divisive political time?
Well, I think it's important to acknowledge, I know you did the piece earlier on the vaccines, that our lives are not going to magically change overnight with the new year. So I'm similarly in the back of the line. So I think there is 268 million people in front of me. So things are not going to drastically change as soon as the clock hits midnight. And we're into the new year. And you're absolutely right, Randall. We have a lot of issues to confront as a politically divided country, a grieving country. So over 300,000 Americans have died from COVID, unemployment, underemployment, small businesses devastated. And to me, one of the most interesting things of this is the to-be-determined mental health consequences. And I know in your segment yesterday, you talked about evictions, so people who have been unable to pay their rent and mortgage. And these are real problems that we're going to have to address as a society for years to come. And with that being said, there are still opportunities for us to experience joy in our lives. We've just had to rethink, how do we bring joy into our lives? So the days of joy on demand are no longer here. So the fancy vacations or the nice dinners out, unless if you're Gavin Newsom and you get to go to French Laundry, right. But for most of us, that's not an option right now. Or for me, the long walks down every aisle at Target is temporarily suspended, right? I'm staying at home. And yet we can still generate joy through our thoughts and our behaviors. So for example, if I were to ask you, Randall, on a scale of 0 to 100, 0 being low, 100 being high, how much joy are you feeling right now? And depending on how much you're enjoying our conversation, you might say, maybe 30 or 40. But then if I say, Randall, take the next 3 minutes and describe to me one of your most fantastic vacations. And we're not going to go anywhere. You're not going to show me any photos. But just during those 3 minutes, if you can describe to me that vacation, and every minute, if I then ask you, Randall, how much joy are you feeling? Your joy, self-reported joy, is probably going to go up. So that's a way of acknowledging how powerful our attention is. So where we choose to place our attention influences our emotions. So if I'm standing in line at the post office and I'm getting really irritated by how slow things are moving, or at the grocery store, I can decide, where do I want to place my attention? Do I want to place my attention in a place that's going to generate impatience and irritation and judgment? Or do I want to place my attention on maybe a memory that brings back a lot of joy? We can also generate emotions through our behaviors. So one of my favorite things is to engage our five senses to make everyday experiences a bit more special. So for example, wearing my favorite piece of clothing, even if it means I'm slightly overdressed for Zoom calls, or having candlelit dinners over a bowl of spaghetti, or on the rare occasion I go to the grocery store, picking up fresh flowers or getting out into nature, those sorts of things that we can derive joy in just using our five senses to pick up on the things around us.
Being in the moment and finding joy in that moment.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a choice, and we all have that choice, right? We can continued to ruminate about all the things that are not going well, again, at a micro or macro level, and all of those things are true, or we can choose to bring in the other half of reality, which includes these beautiful fall leaves on my daily walk.
Right. Doctor, we did a show on gratitude just before Thanksgiving. It was a terrific show and really encouraging to hear from so many Insight listeners about their experiences this year. I actually had gratitude for their stories of gratitude. Do these emotions multiply that way? I know Oprah uses a term like pay it forward. Does that work when you use emotions to sort of generate those same emotions?
So sometimes people talk about emotional contagion, how emotions can sort of rub off on other people. And I certainly have had that experience. And so we want to be really aware of our emotions, and not that we want to suppress negative emotions, because there's a lot of research from James Gross and colleagues at Stanford that suggests that if we're suppressing emotions, that's not good for our physical health. It's not good for our relationships. So it's not that we want to suppress anger or sadness or grief. It's just that we want to acknowledge all emotions that we're feeling. And if you notice that you're not experiencing a lot of positive emotions in your life, then think about ways that you can slightly manufacture these joy moments, whether it means turning on your, you know, favorite pick-me-up song by Calvin Harris or whomever it might be, and turn it on and dance and be silly, for example. Not that I do that, but
you right. know. I'm now visualizing it. Doctor, one last thing here. You gave us some tips for experiencing joy in the moment. How can we be more compassionate to ourselves and others in 2021?
Well, again, compassion is about suffering, and there will continue to be suffering in our lives into 2021. And what I would say is to think small, and it might be something as simple as pausing and asking yourself, what do I need right now? Or what does this other person need right now? So perhaps it's going outside and getting a breath of fresh air, or giving yourself a gift of going to bed 30 minutes earlier, getting the rest that your body needs, connecting with other human beings virtually via Zoom or FaceTime, laughing, singing, dancing, those sorts of things. Yeah. And being curious about, what am I willing to give away to other people this year? So am I willing to give away things like patience and understanding, extending the benefit of the doubt? So when a colleague is doing something irritating, can I pause and take a breath and ask myself what might be causing this? Mm-hmm. And being willing to accept help from other people. We know that it feels really good to be helpful and contribute to the lives of others. So allowing that help from others when it's being extended to you.
Yeah.
These are simple things that are not easy and can be easy to forget. So coming back to them again and again.
I always try to think, I don't know what's happened in their day. I don't know what's going on in the background, you know, and I try to have some level of understanding there instead of getting angry right away. So Dr. Huria Jazairi is an assistant professor of management at the Levy School of Business at Santa Clara University. Great tips this morning. Thank you so much, Huria.
Thanks so much.
Very much appreciated. Okay, still ahead. It's that time of year when we enjoy the holiday treats, and then a couple of weeks from now, we start rethinking how and what we eat. Do you have a dietitian question? Now's your chance to get tips from a registered dietitian. Shoot us an email, insight@capradio.org. Again, insight@capradio.org. Or you can use the Twitter hashtag, AskInsight. And we want to let you know that tomorrow will be our last show of 2020. We will, of course, be back on January 4th. While we're on break, we will air Here and Now at 9 a.m. and on Christmas Eve, the new Kitchen Sisters special. We're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Randall White. Social media during the lockdown back in the spring was overflowing with pictures of people baking, eating, and a never-ending stream of cocktail recipes. You know, we were using food and drink to comfort ourselves during a huge upset in our lives. And then the pandemic never went away, nor did some of our bad eating and drinking habits. As a result, some of us, and I'll be transparent and say that I am definitely in this group way more now than we'd identify as being in our ideal range. But how do we get back on track? And what really even is the right track? Dietitian and co-host of the My Black Body podcast, Jessica Wilson, joins us now with some food and lifestyle tips to hopefully make 2021 a healthier year for you. Great to have you here, Jessica.
Oh, thanks, Randall. It's great to be here.
So how might traditional nutrition recommendations actually cause harm? You know, we're constantly hearing on the radio that this is right for you, or on television, I should say. You know, you should be eating this, more blueberries, more antioxidants, more superfoods, right. Kale.
Yeah. Adaptogens. What do those words even mean? Yes. I think so often what we see on television and social media is really geared towards those with a lot of privilege, a lot of economic privilege, right? And the majority, especially in a pandemic, of folks don't have means to indeed go out and buy organic blueberries. So like, what can our food messages be that are inclusive of the people who are standing, you know, in line, waiting in line for hours at food banks right now? So I think when those messages really center folks with privilege and time and access, that's when food related messages can cause harm.
Mm-hmm. And so what do you think the messaging should be?
Right. So I'm far more a add-in versus a takeaway, right? So the messages are never negative. It's never like a don't eat this or a stop or only, right? There aren't ever really like the constraints around eating. It's what can we add in? Do you want your food to be more colorful? And there are many ways to do that. There's not the only eat, you know, fresh or organic produce. Like all produce is going to be, you know, better than none at all. And then frozen is really accessible to folks now that we're speaking of things that are less perishable, canned fruits and vegetables always. So like, how can we add in foods to our diet rather than removing them?
And in some cases, there's evidence to show that frozen fruits and vegetables actually have more nutrition.
Absolutely. So things that are frozen are flash frozen on site. They aren't transported, you know, by truck or however, where they're exposed to light, to heat and air. So yeah, frozen vegetables for the win, 100%.
Yeah. And when you say colorful, you're not talking about like gummy bears.
Well, you know, I think going back to perhaps the intro and your last speaker, always opportunities for compassion.
Right? And joy.
Yeah, it's still a pandemic. We still may be using food to cope sometimes, and that's just fine. Fruit Loops, gummy bears, the colorful things.
The color, yes, right, also, yeah. But also the fruits and vegetables in there. And
also.
Yeah, so Jessica, how do you think we as a nation became so preoccupied with our weight and what we're eating?
Right. It goes back centuries to, we'll keep it brief. It goes back centuries, but currently now we're getting a lot of, you know, senses of morality in our food and our body size. Some researchers have hypothesize that with us becoming a less religious nation as a whole, that we're really looking towards like food and body size to dictate, you know, like the rules of engagement and then like morality based on like food health and our body weight. So a lot of that, you know, you've already mentioned Oprah in the show, but like how our conformity to those norms can really just amp up how as a society we're thinking about these things.
Mm-hmm. When considering a diet that's right for me or you or, you know, whoever the person might be, it's okay to consider your comfort foods, what you grew up with, what your family traditions are and those sorts of things.
Yes, so often Sacramento, as you know, is a very diverse city. And so often I'll hear, you know, folks from either more traditionally Mexican or, you know, Indian backgrounds having gotten messages from, you know, more typical dietitians that, you know, rice is bad, don't have so many carbs, you know, Mexican food is unhealthy as a, like, umbrella term.
Right.
And so folks, especially the students I work with, are working so hard getting away from their cultural foods, and I just work on bringing those back and saying, you know, the benefits and mental benefits that you get indeed from those things will, like, increase, you know, your mental well-being as well.
Right, because a lot of times the negative versions of some of those different cuisines are because they've been Americanized, right?
Not only that, but just like our Western perspective, back to, you know, white rice is a staple in over 50% of the world. And we wouldn't necessarily go to, you know, like India and say, stop eating it. But somehow, you know, we've designed different rules for engagement in this country. I'm still not sure how it happened. So we've just kind of vilified what's, you know, a common and just fine food to be eating. So It's gotten really complicated here.
Jessica, if you don't mind taking a question from a listener, Lauren writes in and wants to know about the importance of vitamin D. She says she doesn't hear enough about that.
No, it's really, really hard to get in our food, unfortunately. So our primary methods of getting vitamin D are the sun and then from supplements. There is some in fatty fish like salmon and then some in eggs, but really we don't rely enough on it. So, you know, it's not a problem to ask for vitamin D tests at your doctor's, but typically what it comes down to is if you just don't have a lot, it's supplement or making sure to get sunlight.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on supplements?
Ugh, that one's complicated.
Right.
Yes. Vitamin D is really the only one that I've seen be consistently the better way to get a nutrient through a supplement. I would say vitamin D only. And then where do you get these? You get them off the internet. You know, if I look toward, well, ask your pharmacist, you know, if they were going to recommend something, or your doctor or medical provider, like, what would they actually recommend? Do they want something regular off the shelf, or do they have a specific brand? But yeah, that's a tricky topic.
But in general, like, as just a general piece of advice, people should be getting all those through their food, right?
100% through your food. Multivitamins, there is zero research to show any benefits. The phytochemicals that come with your food when it comes to vitamins and minerals are going to increase the absorption of those. You also get a bunch of excellent benefits from actually chewing your food rather than taking it in supplement form. Yeah.
But there was definitely like a pill generation.
The Jetsons is really how I feel. Like, it just got in our brains. Like, wouldn't it be easier if we could just get everything in? They're Soylent from Silicon Valley, which is just like shakes that are supposed to give you all of your nutrients for a day. Yeah.
Okay. So with the little time we have left, what might be some food related goals for the new year that are not restrictive and rigid things, you know, advice we can actually follow?
Yes. I go back to your most recent guest who was talking about the five senses. And you think that's awesome. Like, how can we be experiencing food in a way that is going to provide a lot of the, you know, positive things that we're missing in society right now? How can we indeed be trying different cuisines? Is there a cookbook that you want to, you know, cook most of your way through? And then, of course, I will talk about fruits and vegetables. And I always plug breakfast, starting off with eating breakfast during the day. People will ask me all the time about intermittent fasting. I'm like, that's what half the country is doing anyhow, because we're just not eating breakfast. So getting your energy, you know, having yourself together, I will make that plug for breakfast, adding that one back in.
For those who might live in what are considered food deserts, what are some resources for getting those fruits and vegetables?
So right now I'm over in Oak Park, and I know on Saturdays there's a program out from the Oak Park Community Center that will give out, you know, produce that's either about to expire or has expired. So, and then food pantries will have fresh produce right now that grocery stores donate otherwise.
Yeah.
So assuming that there's produce there, not just, you know, canned goods, can be helpful.
Well, great tips. I really appreciate you taking the time to help us all in 2021. We can even get started early. We can, you know.
Yes. I'm going to plug again that compassion. People are gaining weight. It's a pandemic. You know, we're all going to be okay.
That's right. Compassion. All right. Dietitian and co-host of the My Black Body podcast, Jessica Wilson, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome. Take care.
You too. That is Insight for today. I'm Randall White with producers Cynthia Lopez and Kyle McKinnon. Our digital team is Chris Hagen, Emily Zentner, Helga Salinas, and Megan Minotta. Our technical director is Mark Jones. Our engineer is Antonio Muniz, and Insight's managing editor is Aram Sarkissian. Joe Barr is Cap Radio's chief content officer. And just remember to incorporate that compassion and joy into your life. We're back tomorrow with our last show of 2020. We'll see you then.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.